Welcome to a policy podcast brought to you by Science Magazine. On March 25th, the Supreme Court will hear a case on whether companies can pay to delay challenges on drug patents. I'm chatting with Scott Hemphill, co-author of the policy forum Drug Patents at the Supreme Court, appearing in our March 22nd issue.
The settlement issue arises when generic drug makers try to come into the market before patent expiration. They argue that the patent is no good, and that leads to patent litigation. Now, what we're worried about in this case is when there's a settlement of a particular kind. The branded firm pays the generic firm to abandon patent litigation and agree to delay entry rather than coming in early. And the question is whether a payment like this in exchange for additional delay by the generic firm is illegal.
Scott, this is a legal issue, but how does it affect science and technology? I mean, how will the outcome of the case actually impact research?
I think the easiest way to see this is to think about the arguments offered by settlement defenders. So one of the arguments that's offered is that, look, even if settlements result in higher prices because of delayed generic entry, there's a silver lining. The branded firm gets higher profits, which in turn leads to even more innovation, so that even if there's a short-run harm, there's a long-run benefit. Now, we think that that's potentially a problematic argument. If it were true, then any firm would be free to price fix or engage in simple cartels with their rivals and then say, oh, but the higher profits are beneficial to the world. What we're interested in here beyond that theoretical response is to try to do some empirical work to get a sense of which kinds of cases and which kinds of patents and which kinds of innovation are being subjected to these settlements, because that would have implications for what kinds of innovation are being subsidized by these agreements.
Looking at it purely from what would be best for science and for research, is there an outcome that you'd say is clearly beneficial to the scientific community or to just research in general?
Suppose the FTC loses. That basically means that a branded firm is free to pay the generic firm to stay out of the market until the expiration of the patent. And that's true no matter how weak the patent is. That is, no matter how unlikely it is that the branded firm would win litigation over the patent's validity and infringement. Now, that has consequences for innovation because it means that there is a subsidy to innovation, but it's a selective subsidy that applies particularly for innovations backed by patents that are weak. What the concern would then be is that this will disproportionately provide incentives for Me Too innovation or tweaks on existing molecules rather than the new active ingredients. And given the current crisis in pharmaceutical R&D, where new active ingredients are in relatively short supply, we think it's quite short-sighted to permit settlements that have this strange and untoward distortion to innovative efforts.
So, you know, right now we're talking about a relatively narrow area. What are some other arguments that judges and attorneys on either side of the issue are considering?
One issue that has to be at the forefront of a judge's mind whenever you're talking about settlement is the savings that a settlement can provide. Defenders of settlements here argue that litigation for drugs is very expensive. Each side might spend $5 million, $10 million or more to see a patent case through to conclusion. And so settlement is seen naturally and quite understandably as valuable because it avoids that wasted expenditure. Now, that said, I think it's important to recognize that not all settlements are created equal. The Federal Trade Commission is taking the view that it's fine to settle, it's just important to settle in a fashion that is not anti-competitive. And there's a second point here, which gets to the size of the market for a particular drug. Compare the savings from avoided litigation to the amount of consumer harm that you can potentially see in one of these settlements. And if you have a drug with $1 billion of sales, you might have several billion dollars of consumer harm. And compared to that, $10 million in litigation savings is just a drop in the bucket.
So a case has to go through a lot of lower court decisions to get to the Supreme Court. What are some key past decisions that have been made on this case?
So the key to the Supreme Court's review of this case is the fact that lower courts in the United States have come to differing conclusions about the validity of these settlements. Some courts have said it's fine to pay off your rival because patent law essentially trumps over antitrust law. Other courts have come to the conclusion that if you pay a rival to delay entry, that that is at least presumptively anti-competitive.
How will this new information affect those sorts of decisions? So you make the point that the argument for these reverse payments rests on dubious assumptions. So how will this information affect what has in the past been the important or deciding factors in the case?
I think our empirical results affect the debate in a couple of ways, one of which gets back to the core question of low prices versus incentives to innovate. So if you think that there is a silver lining here and that higher profits for drug makers is good because even though there are higher prices, it leads to innovation, then you very much want to know which innovations are going to be promoted through settlement. Our results show that the innovations that are likely to be subsidized are the ones that are backed by secondary patents, which are primarily follow-on innovations. So that changes the debate because it forces defenders of settlements to explain why a selective subsidy of research and development, a selective subsidy for secondary innovation, is desirable. Our intuition is that that's not so clearly the case.
Why is that?
Our fundamental view is that innovations that are likely to be backed by a patent that is valid and infringed are the ones that are ultimately more desirable for a society. And ultimately, this rests on a presumption that the patent courts more or less get it right, that they validate and find infringement in situations where the issuance of a patent was merited.
Scott Hempel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Reed Scott and his co-author Bhavin Sampat's Policy Forum in Science This Week. I'm Meghna Sachdev. On behalf of Science Magazine and our publishers AAAS, thank you for joining us.